Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
On October 12, 2019, James Smith called the Fort Worth PD's non-emergency number. He asked police to perform a welfare check on his elderly neighbor who had been ill. He and other family members had observed that Ms. Carr, his neighbor, had two doors open and it was late. During that call, James Smith never appeared emotional, nor did he appear panicked about the doors being open. He told the Fort Worth PD's non-emergency operator that two cars that belonged to his neighbor were in the driveway. When James Smith hung up the phone, he sat on his front porch and waited for police to arrive. Here's that call James Smith made that night.
Fort Worth Police Operator, inmate 73, what's the address?
I'm calling about my neighbor.
Okay, what's the address?
1203 East Allen Avenue.
Okay, 1203 East Allen Avenue, what's going on there?
Well, the front doors have been open since 10 o'clock. And I haven't seen anybody moving around. It's not normal for them to have both of the doors open this time of night.
Okay. You know if anyone is inside?
No, I'm not sure. Both of the calls are there.
Okay. Bear with me. And they're in the driveway?
Both the cars in the driveway, yes.
Okay. Can you give me a description, like a color of the vehicles?
Well, one's white and one's dark blue.
The white one is a sedan or a SUV? or pickup?
They're both sedans.
Okay. And what's your name?
James Smith.
And what's your telephone number?
817.
Gotcha. And are they usually home at this time?
They're usually home, but they never had both of the front doors open with the lights on. Like, I can see straight through the house. When my sister woke me up, she stays across the street from them. I live on the opposite side of my sister.
Wow, okay. And the address that you gave me, 1203, that's their address, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll have an officer come by. They're already being dispatched now, okay?
Okay, appreciate it. I mean, it's just not normal for them to have both the doors open this late that long.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Again, listening to that 911 call, let me be correct, the non-emergency call that Mr. James made on October 12th, despite it being after 2 a.m., James Smith was calm when he made the call. Mr. Smith never appeared to state, or even it didn't even appear that he was implying, excuse me, y'all, I'm nervous tonight because I'm without a panel, and this is not like me, but there were so many things I wanted to say that I hope would be said in the trial this week. So I'm a little nervous because I like riding with a whole bunch of people shotgun, but tonight I'm going to do it alone, but I think it's so much that I hope that will be said in the trial this week, points that I'm praying that the district attorney will make, because I think they need to be said. And so tonight I'm just going to mention them because I got a platform and I can do that. Despite, again, being after 2 a.m., Mr. James appeared to me on the call to be calm. When he made the call, he never appeared to say there was a burglary in progress or it was an open structure. I heard him state the two cars that belonged to the owners were in the driveway. I heard him state that the house was well lit, and he could see that from across the street, and the doors were open. Again, I never heard him imply that there was a burglary in progress. James Smith said that the windows and the doors were open and that he could see that from across the street. So with the house being well lit and the doors open, what happened? Well, it appears from the body cam footage that we saw that Aaron Dean and his partner came upon the property at 1203 Allen Street, which was the home of Ms. Carr, Tatiana Jefferson's mother. And despite the front door and the door off from the driveway, that's the covered parking area, both facing Allen Street, both doors being open, the house being well lit, Aaron Dean and Officer Carol Darcy decided to go to the backyard instead, go into a dimly lit, very dark area in the backyard. And from all accounts that I've heard so far, shortly after they got into the backyard, Tatiana Jefferson heard a noise, went to the window to see what was going on, and seconds later, Aaron Dean shouted, "Put your hands up," never announced himself as police. Neither did Darcy, his partner, and Aaron Dean fatally shot Tatiana Jefferson. Now, that's not what I said. That's what all the accounts have said so far. That said, we know that that night, only one person had to make a statement, and that was Zion, the 8-year-old nephew that was in the house with Tatiana Jefferson at the time she was killed. We understand that they were playing video games and having a good time, you know, that night. But we know that he's the only person that had to make a statement, despite the fact he was 8 years old, despite the fact that he was not accompanied by an adult family member, because no one was there but Tatiana Jefferson and Zion. We understand that Zion was taken to an undisclosed location, interviewed by someone who interviews children who have been witnesses to a crime. What I would say, and I can only imagine, Zion, first of all, is 8 years old. He's got to be scared. He's got to be in shock. He's got to be sleep deprived, because this happened about 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's no telling when they got him to this undisclosed location and had him to give his statement. He had just witnessed his aunt, who I understand he adored, murdered. He had just spent a whole day with her having a great time, and all of a sudden, you know, this wonderful day turned into the most terrible nightmare, I can only imagine. He was inside the house at the time that it happened, in the same room, I understand, the back bedroom. Zion was not in the backyard where the shot was taken at. The only people in the backyard were Aaron Dean and his partner, Carol Darcy. That said, little Zion had to be scared to be taken to an undisclosed location, surrounded by people he didn't know, questioned by a total stranger, was not taken there by, again, someone that he knew, not a family member. So that said, why is Zion Carr's statement even relevant? I am much older than Zion, but I can only imagine if I witnessed something like that and I would have been up half the night, probably half tired, scared, in shock. You know, I can just only imagine someone asking me to make a statement after I'd seen something like that. So why do we even care? Why are we putting so much emphasis on what Zion Carr said? Zion Carr, again, was not in the backyard. He was not inside Aaron Dean's head when Aaron Dean took the shot. So what does it even matter what Zion Carr said? Why are we not putting more emphasis on what did Aaron Dean say happened? What did Carol Darcy say happened? We're putting emphasis on a child's statement after he had been traumatized, after he witnessed a murder of someone he loved, someone he was enjoying that day with, and then all of a sudden it turns into this horrific scene. So is this city prepared to ruin the life of a child to get a desired result? Do we really want to say we're going to put this burden on the child? What he said happened? What does it even matter what he said happened? Because he wasn't in the backyard. And it sickens me to hear people talk about the whole trial may be on this child's back. No, it's not. And it's some sick individuals that would even play those kind of games. In my opinion, the only statements that matter are those from the two adult trained police officers that went in the backyard that night, instead of knocking on that front door or that side door and announcing themselves. That side of the house where anybody's never been to that house, on that side where that gate was, is next to some vacant lot. There's not any lights over there. So it had to be dark. You saw from the body cam, it was dark. So why would someone choose to go to the backyard instead of taking a few seconds to assess the situation, peek into the windows, look into the doors? I mean, when you don't see anybody after a few minutes, that should say, well, maybe it's safe to knock on the door and announce yourself as police. That's just, to me, the way I see things should have rolled out. But they didn't. So anybody who says Zion Carr's statement matters and that he should testify is evil. Is evil. That's just evil. This young man has to live with a horrific image in his head for the rest of his life. And rather than the world allowing him to do that and get on with his life, instead, we'd rather tell him that he should get on that stand and testify to what? To what? What can he testify to? If you all are really thinking, the article that came out in the newspaper right after Tatiana Jefferson was killed said that Zion Carr said his aunt took the gun out of her purse. That's what the first statement said. That was the extent of it. And that was put on a police report. But it never said what Carol Darcy said. It never said Aaron Dean saw her take a gun and point it out of the window. It never said that. The police report did not state that Aaron Dean saw a Tatiana Jefferson point a gun out of the window. It did not say that. And so just the statement that he saw his aunt take the gun out of the window, if you pay attention to the body cam footage, it shows a still photo of the gun on the nightstand. It's not in a Tatiana Jefferson's hand. It's not on the floor. Neither did Aaron Dean or Darcy say that a Tatiana Jefferson pointed a gun out of the window. So when we want to put this whole burden on a child about him saying his aunt took a gun out of the window, first of all, think about the fact he was in shock. He was traumatized. And were his words even twisted? Do we know for certain that he said that? Or are we just told that he said it? And I'm not calling the interviewer a liar, but I think everything has to be questioned at this particular point. And so, in all fairness, this isn't about a child and what a child saw that night. We really need to, like, be big girls and big boys about this. It ain't about what Zion said. It's what did Aaron Dean say? Why doesn't he get on the stand and tell why he took the shot? Why doesn't Carol Dorsey get on the stand and say what she saw? She was there. She went in the backyard with him. She also made the decision not to knock on the door. Now, do I blame Carol Darcy for Aaron Dean's actions? No. But up until the point in which he took the shot, they both were following the same blueprint. They did not follow police protocol. They did not knock on the door. They chose to go around the back instead. Where did everything flip from a welfare call to an open structure? Now, who carries that burden? Are y'all then going to take that and put that on the operator? Or who holds responsibility for that? So everybody's talking about Zion Carr, but I'd say Zion Carr is a non-factor in this whole issue. He's a kid. He was 8 years old. He was traumatized. And whatever statement he made, there is not a such thing as a sworn statement by an 8-year-old that was not accompanied by an adult. So that's hogwash. No one can say a 8-year-old child can make a sworn statement. That's ridiculous. So come on, Tarrant County. Come on, Sharon Wilson. What are you doing? I mean, you're on your way out of office. Will your legacy say that you put the burden on an 8, or you allowed the burden to be put on an 8-year-old child? Because that's what he was at the time. And unless y'all let him get on with his life, he'll forever be stuck at that traumatizing day if we make him relive this for the purpose of getting a desired result. I'm just saying. So, let's talk about murder and how murder, the charge murder, is defined in Texas. In Texas, murder is almost always first degree, is almost always a first degree felony because the charge applies when the defendant allegedly knew that he or she would cause death of the victim. Murder is also a charge when a person engages in a dangerous act that causes the death of another. Police are trained to take kill shots. They are not trained to shoot you to harm you. They are trained to kill. I understand that she was shot in the upper chest. The shot was a dangerous shot because if you shoot someone in the upper chest, more than likely, especially at the close range that he was, because there was not a lot of distance from where he was to where she was, pretty much just a window in between them. So that was considered, in my opinion, a deadly shot. When he saw a woman appear at the window of her own home, doing exactly what she should do, and that's looking out the window to see what the heck was going on because she heard a noise in her backyard, was that a reason to shoot? What was the perceived threat? Was he in fear for his life? Did Officer Carol Darcy pull her weapon? Did she perceive the same threat? Did she fear for her life? Just some questions, y'all. I don't have the answers, but those are just some questions. A recent newspaper article talked about the people to know in this trial. First of all, Zion Carr, the 8-year-old nephew of Tatiana Jefferson, who was in the home, in the bedroom, the night that she was killed. James Smith, he was a neighbor who called police that night on the non-emergency number and said that he wanted them to do a welfare check on his neighbor. Carol Darcy. Darch. I think it's her name. Let me get that clarified. I think the officer's name is Carol Darch. I don't know if I pronounced that wrong earlier. She's the Fort Worth police officer that was with Aaron Dean that night as they went into the backyard of Tatiana Jefferson's mother's house. Aaron Dean, he's the former Fort Worth police officer who shot and killed Tatiana Jefferson on October 12, 2019. FYI, there are several people inboxing me on Facebook. FYI, my Facebook is not allowing me to see your messages. I've been having trouble with that all day. I'm not able to see your messages on Facebook. So you're going to have to call in if it's about this show. Malika, I see you're one of those people. I cannot see the messages on Facebook right now. And so that's a problem that's being worked on. R. Dale Smith, he's the assistant Tarrant County criminal district attorney working on this case. Also, we have Ashley Diener. She's a former Tarrant County prosecutor, but she's on this case. She's a Tarrant County prosecutor, I'm sorry. Victoria Ford Oblin, assistant criminal district attorney. The judge is Judge George Gallagher. Aaron Dean's defense team consists of lead attorney Jim Lane, attorney Bob Keel, and Miles Brissett. Some people call it a $1 million defense team. And last but not least, Tatiana Jefferson, who lost her life on October 12, 2019. Some of the people that we know they have called to testify already would be former police chief Ed Krause. He was the police chief at the time of the shooting. former Mayor Betsy Price. She was the mayor of Fort Worth at the time of the shooting. Sharon Wilson, district attorney, currently and also was the district attorney at the time of the shooting. Allegedly, these people made comments and expressed their opinion that Dean was guilty of murder and that there was no justification for his actions. I haven't found the statement, but they're saying that they said it, so I don't know. Lee Merritt, he is the family attorney for the Atatiana Jefferson family. They're saying that he spoke when he knew that he was under a gag order. Councilman Chris Nettles, he served Judge Hagerman, the former judge, who was recused from this case, a letter asking that they start the trial without further delay. And we understand other activists have made statements as well. Well, this has caused Aaron Dean's defense team to say that they wanted a change of venue because they felt that these people were influencers or influential in the community, and so therefore their statement would possibly mess up the jury pool. So out of 2.126 million people in Tarrant County, some kind of way, these people would allegedly interfere with all of them. And so therefore, you can't get a jury of 12 out of 2.126 million people in Tarrant County. I see somebody's on the phone line. 682-250. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Gary.
Yes.
Hey, it's Brother Malik.
Hey, Malik.
Yeah, on that whole thing, because I was there primarily from the beginning. And if you go into that article, based on that investigator from the Fort Worth PD department, in his conclusiveness, he the one who issued the murder warrant.
Wait a minute. Okay, so what Fort Worth police? Oh, let me write this down.
The investigator. Read the article.
Okay.
From the Internal Affairs Department. That's who does the investigations. Mm-hmm. IAD.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot that guy's name, but he the one, in his conclusion, said that Mr. Dean should be charged with murder. If you go back to the first city council, why I stated and explained to the world what this man did. See, hadn't he not shined that light, the sister may not when it came to that window.
Oh,
he shined the light for a reason.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to get everybody to understand. The man shined light in that woman's window for a reason. Most people going to come to the woman and say, what the, you know, you don't go in protective mode. She's a young lady with a nephew. She's startled and she's scared. And she on the south side. That part of Allen, I grew up part on the south side. Part of my upbringing is on the south side. And that area has been a bad area for a long time. Ain't like she was in Westover Hills or Tanglewood. So white, plaid, polka dot, pinstripe, or indifferent would have reacted probably the same way Miss Carr did. I mean, excuse me, Miss Jefferson, when they sent a light piercing through their window. So,
well, let's talk about that. Okay, first of all,
that's
I
a tactical diversion. That is a tactical move to draw your enemy out.
But I question if she even went to the window with a gun, because why didn't the police report? And to be clear, Texas is a stand your ground state, and you have every right to defend your life, your property.
Code, Texas Penal Code 921-24, where you have a right to protect your property.
But even that
number saying, one, let's get it clear, Carrie. Slow down. That's why it's an aggravated case in the state of Texas when they walked into an enclosed area. When your fence is enclosed in your backyard, that's an attachment to the house. Meaning that, number one, the man didn't have a warrant, nor did he have jurisdiction to be in her backyard. So I don't give a damn right, wrong, or indifferent what they think. That woman has a right to have a firearm in her personal home.
But I thought the picture showed the firearm on the nightstand. I remember the early article said the firearm was on the nightstand. So if the firearm is on the nightstand,
she didn't break the law.
She couldn't go to the window. She couldn't go to the window and have it on the nightstand at the same time.
No, and I agree with you 110%.
Okay, so y'all just
so Brown said way he analyzed it, Dean was just a stupid idiot. He said it's no cause for that.
Okay, but let's be clear. Texas is a stand-your-ground state. So if they try to go there, it's a stand-your-ground state. You have a right to protect your property. Anybody in your backyard in the middle of the night is a threat. Anybody that you did not call is a threat, period.
Yes, ma'am.
And so
agree with
she went to the window, right. She went to the window to see what was in the backyard. Immediately
correct.
After that, now someone made a very good point. Larry O'Neill of Upback made a very good point. If he had saw a gun in her hand, wouldn't he have yelled, drop the gun, you know, before he shot? Instead, he said,
wait a minute. Y'all quit trying to analyze these third-grade mind-ass white boys like they graduate from Harvard.
Well,
we're
going to
stop
saying,
that shit.
Larry O'Neill
I don't give a damn about Larry O'Neill. I know, but what white boys take these cop jobs? Quit acting like these white boys are that intelligent. We're not going to play that.
Okay. Well, that we
their comprehension is very low. That's why they have these jobs, because he don't know how to follow his general. He don't know how to follow instructions. That's his freaking problem. That's the problem with the whole department. They don't know how to follow general orders.
But let me say this too. One thing I do know about police officers, you cannot shout command after command after command and expect someone to be able to comply. You have got to be clear and concise on what command
right.
you are giving, and then you have to
I
give
agree.
The person a chance to comply with your command. So
that is true. That's in the general order. You're right.
When he said put your hands up and he immediately took the shot, he never even gave her a chance to comply or to basically process who he was, what he was saying before he took the shot.
Here, back to the whole film. The man stand up there with the light, with his service weapon already out.
Mm-hmm.
So his intentions, I know about this stuff because I deal with my homies with what you call my wife went through Legal Shield.
Mm-hmm.
You got your service weapon out pointing if you ain't your intent is not to use the motherfucker.
True. And let me say this.
If you look at it, he got the light in one arm. He just didn't shine the light free. He already had a service weapon out of the holster. Go back and think about it,
Carrie. I do. And you know what? I remember Eddie Griffin, who's a blogger or was a blogger, wrote an article right after the Tatiana Jefferson shooting. And he made one excellent point. He said the picture released by the Fort Worth Police Department showed the gun was on the nightstand. He said, so for anybody who said she had a gun in her hand, he said the only way that could be possible would be that she went to the window with the gun, and after she was shot, she carefully placed it on the nightstand before she fell to the ground. That was Eddie Griffin.
And I agree with you 110%. 110%, no doubt. We ain't finna spend a whole bunch of time on this. We ain't got to. Is the point his own people said that you murdered this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in their investigation, They said this dude need to be charged with murder. We're going to send up to the DA's office. And Sharon murder, Wilson said, put a warrant on his ass, go lock his ass up. Cut and dry. See what I'm saying? Mr. Krause was in that conversation. The deputy chief was in that conversation, whoever he or she was. The city manager was part of that conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because that's I'm telling you. It was the mayor. Hold on, sister. It, those four people, along with IAD, said, go lock that white boy up. So it's cut and dry. It ain't cut and dry. The hell with Zion had to, because they already know that's not admissible.
Well, 3 years later,
three years later,
and $1 million defense team, I guess they decided to change their mind on that. But we still got to remember they went past two doors and a well-lit house. I mean, and nobody announced themselves, neither Dean nor Carol Darch. They went to a poorly lit backyard. You can hear them whispering.
I spoke to a supervisor high up, and they said the white boy was wrong.
He skipped police protocol, right?
Correct. I said general. I'm talking about the general order. That's not in a general order for him to conduct himself like that, because that was a non-emergency. That was a wellness check.
FYI, if you are inboxing me on Facebook, I cannot read the messages. Facebook is, for whatever reason, is acting up, so I cannot see your messages.
Thing over there is I try to tell the op, Larry O'Neill, because I'm listening to him. He started up when he jumped on this Tatiana Jefferson thing. And also, I think it wasn't Sharon Wilson. Actually, it was Tiffany Burks.
Oh.
To see it like that white boy.
Oh, Tiffany Burke said that.
Yeah, pretty much. She had her hand off in it, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because, you know, I went to the trial a couple of days. Dig what I'm saying?
Okay.
So Sister Burke said that the white boy was wrong. So, anyway, but like I was telling O'Neill, look, man, he's sitting up here telling folks, well, I spoke to some people higher up, and they believe that Dean's gonna walk. Dean's gonna walk. I said, "Hey, man, dog. If you think about it, Carrie, so what makes them so privy to sit up there and have these conversations with you, if you ain't one of them?"
Hmm.
I'm saying you and I, they might have a conversation with you and I. So why would they have it? Why would they be telling Larry some of that shit?
Okay.
And so, when we was on the when we was on the feed, my phone went crazy. My phone started locking up and started doing all kinds of weird stuff. And I told Larry, I said, look, man, the police, the officer on the feed. And you can tell how some of these people answer questions, understand me, they tied to the police. I said, man, they watching this feed, bro.
Let's talk about the fact what happened today. Larry O'Neill did a show early this morning talking about the K.
That's what I'm telling you.
No, I'm going to say what happened after that. Then Larry called me several times today and said that he had gotten calls from high ups in the Fort Worth Police Department saying that it was the whole case was under a gag order and that he was not to speak on it. He then said he spoke with Manny Ramirez, who now is on the commissioner's court, but was, and I think he's also the Fort Worth PD POA president. And so Manny Ramirez said that it was, So Manny Ramirez told him it was okay to talk about it. Then all of a sudden, there was a message that was sent to him basically saying that allegedly Facebook had taken down his post or blocked the video because they were saying that if copyright infringements were taking place, because allegedly some kind of way it was some strange thing about the FIFA World Cup, which he didn't even mention on that particular thing, which I found that very strange. But so I'm not sure if they're bullying people. Oh, this is what it says. It says there are changes to your video because of a copyright match. It says the following actions were applied to your video by FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 copyright protection because it may contain 13 seconds of content they own. The video was made unavailable by the right owner. Copyright content found in your video audio segment, and then they put the date and time. Now,
Yeah, see, they ain't got nothing to do with no soccer. That was weird.
She said, right, and I questioned. He said he wasn't able to contest it with Facebook, which is odd. So I just questioned if this is like Fort Worth PD, like, you know, harassing people. Come on, y'all. And so, but y'all say y'all want to see justice. Y'all say y'all want to see everything above board. You're talking about transparency, Chief. You're saying that, you know, you want time to clean up your department. Well, you cannot continue to allow officers to bully people. But then nobody wants to get a civilian review for it. It's needed. If you got this trial going on and people are being bullied and told, you know, sent messages to let them know that their Facebook account has been hacked, you know, who hacked it? You know, so, I mean, who would have an interest in hacking it? You know, and so I just think going into this trial, there are so many things that are strange. I mean, the fact that we're talking about a change of venue when this particular trial has gotten and been afforded every single advantage known to man. I mean, we've talked about delay after delay after delay.
You recuse the judge because he wasn't swaying towards the cop. So y'all tell him, get him out. Sharon Weston talking about get him out. You got to understand who behind the goddamn curtain. That's what we always watch cops. Don't understand. Who controls this? The county DA and some of these damn commissioners that's tied to this shit and the city manager. So,
since when
judges don't have attitudes? That shit was petty. That's the scary part.
It was petty on every level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you didn't give any specific violation where you said he did something that was unconstitutional or, you know, illegal or anything like that. So it was one of those things that makes you wonder, did they just not want this judge on the case, or did this judge just not want to be on the case, one or the other? But, you know, we're talking about we've had a pandemic. And then we're talking about delay after delay. The attorney's sick. The attorney's got a vacation. Recusing the judge.
Special witnesses. All these special witnesses.
Right. Special witnesses are unavailable. You know, so at what point do we say change of venue really makes no sense in this particular case? Because if this was Joe Blow, would Joe Blow be allowed this many special treatments in one trial?
That's on Dale Smith to make that argument.
But see, okay, this is the problem or the situation that everybody needs to pay attention to. A lot of people feel like they're trying to get the trial moved to someplace like a Parker County, Midlothian, Midland, Angel.
That makes sense.
Where's a large police presence there, where people either work in law enforcement or family members of law enforcement.
Right.
But let's talk about how many people live in Tarrant County. Tarrant County has 2,126,477 people. How many registered voters are in Tarrant County? Because I understand most jury pools are pulled from registered voters.
That is true.
In Tarrant County, you have 1,263,000 1,265 registered voters over the age of 18, and you only have to be 18 to sit on the jury. Okay?
Gallagher is going to let them get eight white conservatives, old, anywhere from 55 to 60, empathetic ass to the police white person. They shooting for eight. Rest of them going to be two niggas, and the other ones maybe Hispanic or Middle Eastern. That's what they want to let fly. They want to fly, let's put it that way.
Well, let's talk about Fort Worth. Fort Worth got 958,692 people as of 2022. So we're right at a million. So out of all these people, give or take, and we're probably over a million, think about it.
Yeah.
You can't find 12 people? You can't find 12 people.
I agree with you 110%. They full of shit on that. But the thing of it is, I don't like how this judge is letting a defense team set the stage on how the trial is supposed to go. Most judges don't kind of let the prosecution dictate everything, because when in the Gary Hull case, he just went with the flow of the prosecutor.
But y'all, do y'all understand, though, it doesn't make any sense that people are scared to talk about a trial of the century in Fort Worth? Do y'all realize how ridiculous it sounds that people are fearful to
talk?
The thing
of it is, the people that are down there hollering their leaders, they not already paid them off. That's why they give them that money.
Where the protesters at? Everybody
told
them.
The thing of it is, I like the fact that silence. I love the silence.
You love who?
I said I love everybody being quiet.
Oh, yeah. Right. Where the protest is at? Everybody sure is quiet, y'all. I mean, there has
been. I told them to sit down and shut the fuck up because I don't want that BLM and the rest of these sunbucks coming over trying to hijack.
But
we already did that. Why you going to keep on doing something over and over again, getting unnecessary people arrested? Because ain't nobody going to make nobody bond. Two, understand me. Ain't nobody got time to get pepper sprayed. Three, understand me, let the chips fall where they may. So because protesting ain't going to get it. That shit did. That shit's antiquated.
Where's the media coverage? I've seen NBC5 and Star Telegram report on this in the last 24 hours. That's it. I mean, how you going to have the trial of the century in Fort Worth, Texas, and you got only two media outlets?
Yeah,
you
know another thing, too? That Boule nigga Roland Martin ain't said a goddamn thing.
Who?
Roland Martin.
Okay, Roland Martin, right. So what are we really
talking about? You notice that he ain't said a goddamn thing.
No, he ain't said a thing. But something's wrong. And so you got one talk show host, Larry O'Neill, who says they're harassing him and basically telling him not to talk about it, and the fact that Monday he's going to be a gag order on him. Yo, what is
because
going on?
Because he run down there and be in their face, and they telling him shit, and Larry going off in here running his mouth.
Well, Larry O'Neill, if you listen, we love to hear from you tonight. I'm just saying, you know, but they've asked for change of venues before and nothing has happened. And so, you know, just looking at all the news coverage that has been so far, it really hasn't been to the level of a Breonna Taylor or George Floyd or even
another
a Malcolm Young.
How the hell they get a hold of Zion's testimony and that shit is illegal? The judge is supposed to. The media ain't supposed to have that goddamn me. That boy's at the time anything about him, you can't print in the paper here, nor can you get a hold of that affidavit.
But see,
his mama signed a release on it. You can't do that.
On a closed case, though, you can get witness testimony and things like that. FYI, the case is closed.
I got damn law. You cannot when it comes to a mob. That's a no-go.
They did it on Sherrall Thomas's shoulder. They did. I read their statement. Maybe it's Tarrant County, but I read their statement. And so the thing is, but is this case closed to the point that people can do a FOIA request and get all the information? Because I did on the Sherrall Thomas case. It cost me peace for the last, 10, 12 years because I found out that information. But on a closed case, you can, under a FOIA request, ask for things like the autopsy.
When that case is open, I ain't supposed to.
Police
not when that case is open.
Okay, witness statement. So I don't know. Maybe with the case being going on, I don't know. But Sherrall Thomas, remember, they no-billed the officer. So after they no-billed the officer, you could, under the FOIA request, get
right. Because that case is closed.
Right.
I'm talking about why it's open. That's what I'm saying. That case was still active. And how the hell did you get a hold of the affidavit? And who gave it to you?
There was a lot of information in that article that had never been said before, which is very interesting.
That's what I'm talking about. Who's feeding them information? Because it had to come from the DA's office.
Because
that's what affidavit is.
The defense
who in the DA's office is the mole. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Who's the mole?
That part. See, the defense is claiming that the pretrial publicity has been extensive, prejudicial, and inflammatory against Dean, saying that the influential persons in the county have
when are we supposed to empathize with a fucking murderer?
Well, let me finish.
Who does that in their fucking right mind?
Well, listen to
this. Who empathizes with a murderer?
Well, listen to this. Instigated a dangerous combination against Aaron Dean, by reason of which Aaron Dean cannot expect a fair trial in Tarrant County in this case. Well, that said, I ain't never seen nobody get a fairer trial than Aaron Dean so far. Now that's just, I mean, if it gets any better, I just don't know if we can stand it, because he has been afforded luxuries that other people have not been afforded.
Three years of stall out.
What?
I said 3 years of stall out.
I mean, out on bail. You know, he even got bailed out on a holiday. You know, where to do that at? Somebody found a judge on a holiday and got him out. You know, he's had like $500,000 defense so far. You know, so like, you know, bullying judges, bullying everybody. So I just don't know. And listen, y'all, this is my theory. If they take tonight's show and say that it caused them to get a change of venue, they was going to change the damn venue anyway. Believe that.
No. That thing of it is, that stuff streamed out globally.
Mm.
And what they're trying to do is suppress. Everything they did is suppress.
Right.
And the judge has allowed them to do that shit because he's a cop lover.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
And this POA mafioso has invested in the DAs and these motherfucking judges, so when they get in trouble, the judge is going to side their way.
Hmm.
That's what the game. You got to understand what bullshit games are being played.
Well, yeah,
the main thing the POA get their money for is for these situations right here.
But see, in my opinion, I don't know how important it is for certain people to get a desired result, but no desired result is worth ruining a beautiful little boy's life. No,
and I agree. Desired
is worth that. And I think everybody needs to pay attention to that. Do we want to let this county put the weight of this whole thing on the shoulders of an 11-year-old boy? He's trying to get on with his life. He shouldn't even have to testify. Testify to what?
My whole thing is, what kind of language did you use? Zion wasn't up there, used to talk to no goddamn white person all the goddamn time. Did you intimidate him? Did you do this? Did you do that?
You know what I'm saying?
I would love to know the answer to that. I would love to know.
And the thing of it is, like you say, it's 2-something in the morning. That baby tired, probably was hungry, probably starved him out to get him to say what you want. So we don't know that. And your dad don't make no effort to get in contact with his next kin. And my whole thing is, I'm going to tell you how shit was fucked up. And Mr. James called, and Mr. James was familiar with the family. Why didn't he go across the street and say, Mr. Smith, can you get in contact with Zion's parents?
Yeah.
Or next to kin? And which they knew Mr. James, because he knew him.
Yeah. Why didn't they take Mr. James? Since he couldn't get in touch with him. Why didn't it take Mr. James, since Mr. James knew him?
See how the bullshit works?
Y'all, this boy, I'll stand on this. I'm sure he was scared.
The fact is, Mr. James said, this is my neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbors. Mm-hmm. I mean that if you are familiar with your neighbors and their well-being, that means y'all have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And see,
they're so smart, they dumb. Well, we got to be clear. Don't let them put this on this kid. Don't do that. He didn't shoot nobody. And what he says is irrelevant because it was done.
The thing about it is, Kevin Smith filed the emotion, like in the things that's, and he knew it. Certain things that's in that civil case said they violated Brother Comrade's constitutional rights. Did you read him his Miranda rights? Do we even know what the word Miranda means? Did you tell him he has the right to be silent till his mama got here? I don't say nothing till your mama get here. See how the crap works.
They probably didn't give him Miranda rights because he wasn't charged with anything. You see how that works?
And see, now they didn't do none of that. See, that's another thing that I was telling Kim Neal is that every time one of these officers make one of these critical mistakes, first thing, it should be part of policy that they go take a UA. Because anybody else that makes a mistake on their job that they consider dangerous or critical, you going to go to the the next Carinal unit or one of these clinics. They're going to take a UA. If you come back dirty, you're automatically terminated. And that's the only profession I know that they do not do it when these officers, they tear up, they wreck up, and do all kinds of diabolical shit, and they do not. As I'm saying, it's the accountability.
Okay, listen to this, y'all. A statement taken under duress. Basically, every person has a constitutional right to remain silent.
Correct.
However, if the person, however, if a person is stupid enough to be coerced into talking, then that person has to face the consequences of self-incrimination.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
The statute of a minor.
Right.
The statute of a minor is totally different.
Right. So we're talking about an adult here. That's clear. So we're talking about a little child who's scared to death, like you said, sleep deprived, probably hungry, taken to a strange building, being talked to by a total stranger, asked about stuff that he just witnessed that scared him to death, and then you tell me he made a sworn statement. About what?
Any child psychologist that the state should bring in should counteract that very well. And I wouldn't bring no non-indigenous on the what you call side. I have someone of African descent that know our kids and how they function or how they react.
Listen to this. On May 30th, 2022, it says no court will admit a statement it finds to be made under duress.
But see, thing of it is, it wasn't nobody there to witness his act of duress. And the file is that they didn't contact his mama.
Well, he can say, you know what? Put him on the witness stand and let him tell y'all how he took that. He made that statement under duress and how he was scared to death and trembling and he was fearful and he was sleepy and he was in shock and all. Put him on the witness stand and let him tell y'all that and see what happened. That part. Let him break down, and start crying, and tell y'all how scared he was that night when y'all drug him into that building and told him to tell y'all whatever happened when he was scared to death. That's just my opinion. I know that would be me if I were in a situation like that and somebody's telling me tell what you saw. Well, let me tell you my frame of mind. First of all, when I went in there, how I was sleepy, I was tired, I was hungry, I was scared, I was in shock, and I just saw my aunt who I adored murdered. That part. So that can kind of, you know, go two ways if you want to play that game. Do y'all really want to put this kid on the stand and he tell y'all how scared he really was when he went up there and started talking?
But see, that's the thing of it is, they say that, but look how unempathetic they are towards this young brother. If you go back to what I said in the first city council meeting, I said Aaron Dean should be charged of child endangerment. Did you thought we slipped when I was calling them out? I told them everything the dude did, and they knew what I did. That's why I received a lot of, that's why my video went viral, because I cracked the case. Because we went back there, and I had a chance to, what you call, thank, and said, why didn't you flash that light? And then I said, and I called a relative of mine that was from the military, and he told me what he did.
Wow.
Because he had to read the light.
Right.
You're going to be startled if somebody shined a light in your window right now this time of night. You're going to be like, what the hell? You know, everybody going to go in defense mode.
I agree. Listen, if you have a question or a comment tonight, the call-in number is 515-605-9321, then press 1. Again, the call-in number is 515-605-9321, then press 1 once connected. We're going to 817-946 first and then 972. Good evening, 817-946.
Yeah, this is Gerald Banks Sr. I was just chiming in. I just actually got in off of a tow and seen your message, and I just figured I'd listen and see what's going on. But in my own opinion, pertaining to the child, if I was an adult, I wouldn't let them forcibly be treating my child like that. And I know there's some law in the books that will protect and prevent grown-ups from physical or mental or, you know, just abusing a child like that, especially after being traumatized the way he was.
You were one of the people that went down after Tatiana Jefferson was killed and talked before city council week after week about, you know, what had happened. But did you ever think we come to the place where we try to put this whole burden on an 8-year-old? I mean, an 8-year-old mind 3 years ago? Are we serious?
I never would have thought that it would come to this. I'm just now actually hearing about this. And like I said, I mean, you know, the individuals, activists, and all other grown-ups, not just the parents or uncles, cousins, or whatever, all individuals should be standing up against that at this point. Matters what the case may be. That's a child. Protect your children.
Y'all, I just Googled, can you take a statement under duress? And they said statements given under duress is inadmissible. As with any legal question in determining whether or not there was duress, it's a situation that can be tricky. And then it says this is the type of issue that you need your lawyer to evaluate and fight for you. Somebody go fight for that little boy. Do not let his life be ruined, and they put this burden on his shoulder because this burden ain't his. And I think the grown people need to stand up and demand that we not put this on this 8-year-old mind who had just been traumatized. Gerald, I'm going to leave your phone line open, and I'm going to go to 972-987. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hey, good evening. Good evening to you, Carrie. Thank you.
Good evening.
Thank you for allowing me on. I would say first and foremost, Carrie, this I know you had questions regarding the local media, this, that, or the other. But let me be one to say that, you know what, you are our local media. You are. I depend more on independent media than I do mainstream media, because we know how mainstream media, they like to spin things, you know. We know mainstream media, anytime anything is pertaining to law enforcement, they always allow the law enforcement's narrative to get out before anything, or, you know, before anything, you know. Law enforcement is allowed to sit on statements. Law enforcement is allowed to sit on footage or evidence that could probably alleviate a situation if they go ahead and release such things. But because we know they have a tendency to, you know, want to, you know, I say just do their little dirty ticks and ticks and tactics, you know, behind closed doors. That's why we usually have delays. So I say this is your time. You've been here. You've been doing this since, you say, 2010, right?
Right.
We started with I'm gonna say his name incorrect. Sherelle Thomas. Yeah. You started with his story, you know, and his story, you know, his life story and what the situation that took his life has brought you just to this point now. So, Tatiana Jefferson's story, and it's gonna need you. Forget local media. You are the one.
Local media doesn't seem to be showing up for this case, does it?
No, not so far. I think once the wheels get to rolling, they'll probably try to flood down there with their cameras, you know, this, that, or the other. You know, I know usually mainstream, not local media, but, you know, media from other, you know, like to cover things on a broader scale, put it like that. But I say that you have established relationships with people who are really close to this situation. Mr. Skip being one, you know what I'm saying? He's come on your platform. You are the one. So I would say this, don't forget your disclaimers, because, you know, with this trial going on.
That disclaimer says the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Fort Worth, Sherry.
Don't forget
those.
Don't forget those, because you know what? They know you have a voice, and they know that a lot of people are listening. It's a lot of people listening.
First of all, we know they're trying to change the venue. So I think I have a very small audience. That's it. So I don't think I'm going to influence jury pool at all. This is just a group of friends sitting around talking about this trial. So if this show ends up in the jury pool, let me be on record. Don't y'all cut that part out. It's a very small show. We're just sitting around kicking it on a Saturday night talking about this trial because they're getting ready to pick the jury on Monday. So that's exactly what's happening tonight, folks.
Okay. Right. Hey, Carrie, these would be my questions tonight. Okay, now, I had to look up. I've heard the address numerous times. Now, look here. I've been traveling up and down Allen for the last, I could say several weeks, back and forth. Mm-hmm. Heard the address numerous times. I've heard Mr. James say it. I've just heard it numerous times, but I never looked it up. Just looked it up on Google Maps and did not realize it's right there in the heart of Allen, Mississippi Allen, mm-hmm. right there at the intersection. I said, wow, I've been passing up and down this and never just dawned on me. You know, Allen is a busy street. I'm sure at that time of morning it's not. So I looked at the Google map. Everything you stated regarding the open field, everything is wide open. So one would, in that sense, knowing that your front doors are open, you know your front doors are open, and you hear something, come on, I would react my damn self. You know what I'm saying? I would react my damn self. So that's all I'm going to say about that. But my question I really want to ask was, the question I want to know is, how long did it take responding officers to get there? Because I'm reading Wikipedia, how they wrote it up, and it states that police officers stated that, okay, Jefferson was killed by the shot and pronounced dead at 3:05 a.m. at the scene. Police officers stated they attempted to provide emergency medical care to Jefferson, but were unsuccessful. I want to know, who were those officers? How long was it responding officers, or was it Dean and that officer? Did they try to provide, you know, medical? Because they said officers. They didn't say who. He just said officers. So how long, if it wasn't Dean, if it wasn't Dean and his partner providing this medical care, how long did it take responding officers to get there to provide this so-called emergency medical care for Ms. Jefferson? That's my question.
Well, let's go back to the 911 call. Why was the 911? Well, I'm sorry, Lord help me, Jesus. It's a long day, y'all. Why was a non-emergency call upgraded from a non-emergency call to which was a welfare check, upgraded to an open structure? So what I saw, and there was a timeline somebody posted, and I did not write the timeline down, y'all, but it was a matter of minutes from the time that Mr. James.
35, and so if I'm assuming they got there within a 15-minute window. It has to be, if you look at the time that she got killed at 3:05. 2:35, mm-hmm. I do recall that that's Dean's beat, that part of the south side.
Mm-hmm. They got there. I'm gonna Google timeline for that. But y'all, I remember that it was like within 5 minutes or something. So I'm trying to figure out how the welfare call got flipped to a 911 open structure call when it was a non-emergency number.
I understand, Mr. James said they didn't park in front of the house.
They came across the street like the task force.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Boy, yeah. And so they parked around the corner. They did not pull up. You know, think about how many things could have been different had they pulled up with their lights flashing. You know what I'm saying? How would that have changed things had they pulled up that way? And so then she could have seen them, knew who they were, and come to the front door. Because she was in the back of the house, but she had every right to be in the back of the house, y'all. I mean, it's her house. And so
the thing of it is, Carrie, they gonna look at, which they also emphasize that, Allen, this is a high crime rate area. You know, it's known to be dangerous with, you know, drug trafficking, robberies, all kinds of things that are not good in that general area from his way of thinking. And but thing instead of executing what the actual cause was, but they conditioned to think like that. And that's just how they are when it comes to our communities.
But that's got to stop, though, because if you walk into every situation with a preconceived notion, then your mind begins to move in areas that it shouldn't be, because you have already formed a preconceived notion before you even arrive.
That's in the training. It's in the training. Like I said, if you go and read some of their general orders and you read that stuff, that's all in their training.
Hmm. Well, we can't win then.
And they treated it as a training ground.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Gerald. Thank you. That's what it is.
That's what that was. Okay, I'm still looking. Okay, so we know the call went in at 2:25. But I want to say I saw somewhere, and I'm still looking for y'all, where they responded like by 2:35. So how did it get upgraded, and who made that decision? That's what we're not hearing. Who upgraded the call?
Man, Sister Kim, everything about the department is about the department. They going to provide misinformation, as they also have conditioned to do. Cover up they miss. This is something they ain't been doing. They always done it.
Well,
you got to understand, you got good and bad officers in the department. And he fell in one of those bad officers category. How many writers was Dean on the misconduct list? How many write-ups has he had behind his conduct? That explains the way he processed.
What did I hear about Aaron Dean being a peeping Tom? One of our local preachers, I don't want to call his name, said that there was some information about he had a history of wanting to always go at it that way rather than, you know, knock on a door. He wanted to peep around and see what was going on, that type of thing. And if you always are processing the information with a preconceived notion, then you are always going to not be looking just at the facts. You know what I'm saying? You no matter what the facts are, you're going to be reading into the facts to come up with this image in your head of what things are happening when they may not be that at all.
Come on, Aaron, that's part of the special response team unit.
Oh, please, I hope not. I never heard that. Who said that? I never heard that.
I'm asking.
I never heard that. I thought he was a rookie for the most part. So how was he on the? No, I hope not.
No, there's some youngsters on the special response team that I've seen for myself, and according to them, you supposed to be on there for a period of time. I seen one little dude. He was on there, looked like he was about 19 or 20. And I know for a fact he ain't been on there that long. You supposed to have at least 2-3 years in the department before you assigned to that team.
But you know what? Let's just say this. Two rookies should not be driving around in their individual cars at 3 o'clock in the morning in the area in which they're afraid to be in.
That's how they place. They come out of the thing and they throw them in them cars. Only training you get is their little hot 6 weeks of training. And then it's a learn on the job situation.
Somebody just told me the show is freezing up, y'all. Listen, I ain't a bit surprised. On these particular shows, they typically do. Something always is a technical issue on a show like that. But again, Chief Noakes, hey, you always telling us how you cleaning up your department and you need more time to fix it. And, you know, if we just give you time, you got it. Well, listen, we waiting because all this bullying stuff should end. I mean, you know, you told us weeks ago you were working on it. We waiting. But your police department should not be operating like a gang. They should not be bullying people. They should not be harassing people. They should not have the whole community scared. That does not sound like a police department. It's just what it is.
I mean,
that's
what the SRT, that gang unit and the SRT, that's what they do.
Oh, my God.
And the
rest. Anyway. A certain individual.
It says the show stopped playing, y'all.
I told you that.
So Chief.
I've been telling you that. So you think these folks ain't listening? They are listening. They keep on trying to tell you that. I hope you don't put a whole bunch of faith in Larry O'Neill.
No.
When he tell you that he buddied with the officers. So that doesn't make no sense.
One thing about it, we're just a group of individuals sitting around the fireplace discussing, just, you know, chilling.
But see, you know what, though? But see, what we're going to do, we're going to keep going down to the city council meeting and telling them why we need a civilian review board. Because on situations like this, you got an IT department that does this kind of BS. And so, therefore, Chief Noakes, it doesn't seem like you got it all under control. Because if you can't control the people that are under your command, seems like we need a civilian review board to have as someone that people can take their problems to.
Noakes is learning on the fly, too. That man ain't never been a police chief before. He's doing whatever David Cook telling him to do in the
system. Chief Noakes, you got to have a vote of confidence from the public that we are okay with you being able to fix this. Because if you're not, we got the whole community scared of the police department. The police department is supposed to be there to protect and serve. What are we doing?
That's the point. It ain't about the department. Kerry, it's about the brotherhood. That's what you thought about. Yeah, like ain't no Klansmen and no oath keepers and all that in that police department. It ain't about that uniform. It's about the brotherhood. You think all the white boys got bald headed at one time? Come on, sis, wake up now. Wake up.
Wow.
Look at their tattoo.
But they're going to keep on the FBI or somebody. How are you going to have to come up in here? Because if, you know, you got all these reports, even Kim Neal's office is saying you need a civilian review board up in here. You got the 97-page report. You got all kind of complaints from civilians.
Well, it ain't about that brain Flores. He the one who did on the deal. Flores did that. I'll call her Carlos Flores. He the one did that.
Oh, that's true. He threw the vote.
You need a citizens review board with the subpoena power, and you need to focus on that immunity.
You know, immunity that you hide behind.
The Constitution of the United States upholds that qualified immunity.
Okay, let me tell y'all something about qualified immunity. And next Friday, we're going to be talking to this lady, Dee Crane. Dee Crane, a local activist, son was killed by the Arlington Police Department. His name is Tavis Crane, or was Tavis Crane. Tavis Crane was in his car, should have been a traffic stop, and Officer Roper, Craig Roper, got in this young man's car, grabbed him from behind, put him in a chokehold, and his foot released off the brake. Anyway, Roper told him that... you know, what happened was something totally different from what happened. He said that the boy was trying to run over it, when in fact the boy never put the car in park when everything was going down. And so when the officer jumped in the back seat and put him in a chokehold, his foot came off the gas and moved, and it almost hit somebody. So that said, they accused him of having tried to kill one of the officers, when in fact that wasn't the case. So... They found him not guilty, but the mother appealed.
Over there, Eric, we as a people.
But wait,
Let me finish.
This is important. The mother appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court, and they found out that they said this officer was wrong, and they said what he should have done was given this boy a ticket and let him go. That said, they removed the qualified immunity in this case. So we are automatically assuming all these people have qualified immunity. Y'all listen, go back and appeal the qualified immunity status on some of these cases, because on him, they removed it, which allows the family to be able to sue.
That just happened
the last couple of months ago in Arlington, Texas.
What becomes the officer even after the qualified immunity is suppressed?
Well, you know what? That's the crazy part. He's still working for the Arlington Police Department in a death.
See, right then and there, what needs to be legislated is that when them officers do that type of stuff, they should be stripped. See, number thing, too, that we need to demand is that that's the only profession that you ain't governed by Texas Department of License and Regulations.
Well,
that's a governing body that needs to be implemented to the police department if Texas Department License and Regulations. Okay, you lose your license, you can't be no cop no more.
That's what
should happen. So those are the things we have to petition the state legislation, understand me. But it's going to be hard because our, you know, white Democrats and Republicans, they are cop lovers.
Mm-hmm. And see, y'all, the scary thing about this trial, it seems to be going that along the lines, well, okay, the people versus the police department, or the black people versus the police department. It shouldn't even be about that. What happened to right and wrong? What did he, somebody is dead and somebody murdered them. So what happened to that part?
RAB say they are wrong. They the one who put the damn torch on Aaron Dean.
Wow. I'm just trying to say,
the investigator, and when it hit Tiffany Burke's desk, they said lock the white boy up. Don't get skewed by the media. Go by the facts. He the one got the goddamn warrant. He the one got locked up. He the one out on bond.
Y'all, something wrong with this whole case. I mean, something's very wrong. So, okay, first of all, let's talk about this. What did Carol Dorsch say? What did the officer that was with Aaron Dean say? Hold on. She didn't quit. She didn't quit that day. Aaron Dean quit. They had 72 hours to give a statement. Aaron Dean quit before he gave his. So what did she say? So why do we even care what the 8-year-old says when she was there in the backyard with Aaron Dean? So
what the Umbrellas don't know, they have suppressed anything that has to do with that young lady.
So pay attention to that.
We don't know what if you go, I allude again back to what I called out at that first city council meeting, and I told Krause about, the videos and the angles, any genius know that they have played with that goddamn video. It's blurry, barely can make it out, and all of a sudden, the white girl camera don't work.
Mm.
You don't do equipment check before you leave out.
Mm.
And it's monitored. It's not monitored by the police department. It's monitored by an independent contractor. Even when they turn that motherfucker off, it's still rolling another 5 minutes.
Mm.
They'll get a signal if that motherfucker's not on when they clock in, like they're supposed to.
Wow. What does that
now,
tell you?
I mean, they ain't gonna tell the truth. Ain't no truth in that goddamn department. Now you insane to believe. I mean, hell, I know retired police officers. Tell you got to be crazy as hell to believe anything to come out of one of the police officers' mouth.
That alone is scary. But I know for myself that I've been told that just because a 4 PD officer lied doesn't mean he broke a city policy. That's what they told me about NPO officer Michael Chavez, number 4058, IED person told me that. Said just because he lied.
He's a lying piece of shit, too. He a lying piece of shit.
Yeah, that part.
He a lying motherfucker.
But he's a Gina Bivens boy, so it's all good. And Gina stood up for him.
And again, for the last time, those white boys that take those jobs are not educated to go to Harvard. They're not educated to go to SMU. Why would you believe that type of white boy? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Them motherfuckers barely can read on 10th grade on a good day.
But I guess I'm still trying to get back to the answer me, though. Where's her statement? And why would Zion's statement, who was in the room with the Tatiana, be more important than Carol Dorsch's statement?
That's what they're trying to allude to, this credibility.
Yeah, pay attention.
Them that damn reporter ain't trying to get just that motherfucker trying to save the white boy.
They looking for the loophole.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
But are the people dumb enough to not be paying attention? What is that people that dumb?
You know, after so long and wearing it down, it tend to have people not pay it any attention anymore.
Mm.
You know, it has to be something to spark up under them in order for them to jump up and say something.
But
and
see,
then
that's
going
to cause a flare-up.
You can only be paid off so many times and for so long before the fact. It's over.
Hmm.
You know, it was over before it got started.
Hmm. That's scary right there. That's it. It was over before it even got started. What does that really mean? I mean, y'all just saying.
We're 3 years down the line. We're 3 years down the line.
Okay, where's
black,
the transcript?
Black
from
white.
From when Hangerman
3 days.
And all the motions from that. When they was up on the Hangerman watch.
Hmm. Y'all still looking at this timeline. Can somebody please find the timeline for me, please? I am looking on all this, and for some reason I'm getting it's in the Forward Star Telegram. Somebody has access to the Forward Star Telegram. That timeline was on there. October 6th. See if you can go somebody and find that, because I'm finding everything but that. But we're going to go back to the phone line, 469-743. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
How's it going, Carrie?
Fine. How's it going with you?
Well, like I said, it's been an interesting past couple of hours.
Wow.
You know, and like I said, I'm just getting queued in, trying to try to chime in on it. I was hoping you were still going to be on, but it seems sounds like you guys are really on it now.
And we trying, cause we just don't feel like, you know, if y'all gonna get in the streets, FYI, if y'all gonna get in the streets about this case. Make sure y'all get in the streets because they trying to put this burden on an 8-year-old child. Make sure that justice also applies to Zion Carr. You know, that his auntie would not want this burden to ride on that 8-year-old mind's shoulder, because he may be 11 now, but he was 8 years old when this happened. You agree with that, Reggie?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, but I honestly, I believe that a lot of people are not going to want, you know, Zion to have to bear the brunt of everything, because, I mean, he's never going to get over what he saw that night.
Sure.
That's going to go away from him. I'm certain that it's, you know, in his mind some way, somehow, every day since this happened. And having the trial is definitely going to put some things behind, but of course, you know, the actual trauma of what happened that night, that'll never go away.
Nope.
And but it's incumbent upon us to see to it that there is some type of justice on it. But they're counting on the weakness of our union as far as our resolve, as far as, you know, and we never stay focused on anything, and that's what they're counting on. And I think this is going to be a true test for people, especially in Fort Worth, as to how far are we going to keep getting pushed before we just say enough is enough. And I'm not saying as far as rioting. I'm not saying as far as, you know, running around the street cussing, busting windows. You know, any fool can do that. The only way we're going to get anything done, we have to organize and unite as far as in a political sense, and we got to demand changes and reforms in our system.
Yeah, I agree. Y'all, listen, I'm reading from a press release that was released October 12, 2019. So that was the night that Tatiana Jefferson was killed. It says, serving the public transparently and openly during good events and difficult events is a prerequisite to any professional police department. The Fort Worth Police Department is committed to ensuring the public is aware of major police incidents, especially officer-involved shootings, and that details available are released as quickly as possible given the gravity of the circumstances. On Saturday, October 12, 2019, the Fort Worth Police Department responded to a call for service. Hold on, y'all, my phone. That resulted in the loss of life, and all evidence, witness statements, body cam footage, and any other available evidence is being collected and ultimately will be presented to the Tarrant County District Attorney's Office to determine the final outcome. Okay, y'all, where's the transparency at? You know,
they have to, by rule. And their general order, Kerry, they have to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
That was early.
Mm-hmm. Real early.
And so
transparency. They talk about transparency as a prerequisite. They want to keep the public abreast about what's going on. What happened?
Okay, they released. They did the investigation. The investigator did his investigation. By his investigation, they came up with a conclusion: the white boy should be charged with murder.
Hmm.
And he signed it up to Ms. Burks, third person deputy DA, Burks.
Hmm. Hmm.
Third person in command. She said, lock the white boy up.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kraft gave a statement, said he would have fired his ass. The mayor didn't condone it. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. And the what's called didn't stand by it. The city manager said lock his ass up. So
thing of it is, as a defense, that's what that's what them people are paid to do.
Right.
The thing of it is, quite naturally, the POA going to fight against the sister care because that's going to hold up a whole can of worms. Some other cases that they didn't got away with.
And that's, I know that, that's,
it really ain't so much about Dean being wrong. It's about policies going to have to be changed and some rules and regulations, and they already know it's going to be changed. So it really ain't about Dean. It's about the department and their power. And keep on playing these bullshit ass games they've been playing.
This reminds me of the story with the king and his wardrobe, and it took the little boy to actually hollow out that he was naked for everybody else to see it. I don't know if you all remember the story.
No, I don't. Let me say this, too. Another person we're not going to put this burden on is Mr. James, and that's James Smith.
No, we ain't going to do that.
What we're not going to do forward is make this about that call, because the call has been released. We played it tonight. We played it on a previous show. Mr. James did not say that that was an open structure call. He said he had a neighbor across the street, and the windows and the doors were open, and it was late, and he just wanted the police to go over there and check and make sure everything was okay. So that's what we're not going to do. Two people we're not going to blame this on is Zion and Mr. James. So then let's talk about the two people that we should be looking at. We should be looking at Carol Dart.
Right.
Carol, why didn't you say something? I'm not putting it all on you, sister, but you should have said something like, hey, see what we do. But we heard y'all whispering going in the backyard. So that means at some point you were either following or leading, but y'all were both together going into that backyard. So what did you see, sister? Because did you fear for your life? Did you perceive a threat? Did you pull your gun? Those are things we want to know about Carol Dart. Why did you not follow police protocol? Why didn't y'all knock on the door? Why didn't y'all announce yourselves as officers? Why didn't y'all pull up in the front of the house, sneaking around or coming across the street like the task force and sneaking around the backyard? Those are just questions inquiring minds want to know, period. And don't make this about Mr. James Smith, and don't make this about Zion Carr, because they are not anybody but victims in this case. It was three victims that night: Mr. James Smith, Zion Carr, and Tatiana Jefferson. Everybody else were players.
Another question is, how long have they been doing that, and what are the history of the other cases that they've done it on? It's not the first time they've done something like that for them to do that then.
No. Now, Kerry, if you go to Texas Family Code 151 of really the duties of a parent, and you go to section, start at 001, section number 2. It plainly tells you what your duty is and your rights as a parent of that child. That child won the ward of the state. What gave you the right to question that child when you broke article of law?
They did that to Sherelle Thomas's three kids the night that Sherelle Thomas was killed by Fort Worth PD. And to be honest with you, some of them were younger than 8 years old. They were asked to give sentences.
The thing of it is, they play on our ignorance. That's what they do, then. That's what they're conditioned to do. And first thing they do, when dealing with us, they always try to get you engaged in the conversation. And that's why when my team is out there, we move in a certain way because we're too disciplined for them. We know they move better than they do.
But you know what? I call that cruel and unusual punishment to re-traumatize a child when they just witnessed a murder. That's just my opinion. I think that's re-traumatizing a child.
DA should file.
I know they think black people have a high tolerance for pain, but I think that's some pain that no child should ever have to experience.
But, you know, the reality is,
Carrie, a lot of our people is scared of white folks. And still scared of these white folks.
Tell the truth.
And so when they do, you know, me and the brothers on here, probably we are different, you know, we come from a different tribe.
Right.
I wasn't brought up with no coon card. When my daddy came out of TSU, he was a soul brother, Black Power. That's why I grew up in Holly Hills. So that shit don't register with me.
Right.
You know, we was taught different. We was taught different by everybody in the community, everybody on the block. I can't speak for nobody else. That childish shit my daddy didn't like, and he didn't put it in us. But a lot of that stuff we bring upon ourselves because, number one, we got to get our ass out here and vote. We got to do our civic duties and quit crying and boo-hooing like these folks going to empathize with us. That shit is over with. It's gone. We don't live in that era no more. And that's why the kids don't respect us because they don't see us fighting for shit. And so until we tighten up, understand me, ain't nothing about recreating the Black Power movement. That was the strongest thing that we ever produced. Hell, the Civil Rights Movement era died in about 67, late 66, really tell you the truth. That shit was gone a long time ago. And some of these coons still trying to hold on to that crap. And that's what got us in the place that we're in now.
Let me ask four more questions about Carol Darch. And her name, by the way, if I mispronounced it earlier, is spelled D-A-R-C-H, Carol, C-A-R-O-L, last name Darch. She's the officer that was with Aaron Dean that night. I have four questions. Why was her name never called until recently? We never knew who the other officer was. Why have we never heard her version of what happened, but we heard Zion Carr from the beginning? From the beginning, an 8-year-old child.
Here,
but you never mentioned the officer that was with Dean or her name until recently. Will she testify? Because if she's not going to testify, what sense does that really make? Why would you try to put an 11-year-old on the stand to recant something that he is more than likely confused about that happened when he was 8 years old, but not put the officer who was an adult and trained police officer.
That boy don't remember what he said on that night. It's been 3 years. That boy mine is on PlayStation and playing. Shit,
yeah.
They know that. Come on, let's get real.
And last question.
That boy been traumatized. He got to find mechanisms to get his mind right day to day. That boy still have problems.
Right.
Let's get real.
They should be paying for
it. You can't tell me analytically how that boy mind, where his mind is at. Who gives a damn what the fuck they, who cares about them folks? Who cares? And we need to stop caring.
That's last question. Listen to this last question. Why did someone alleging to be Carol Darch call into Larry O'Neill's show the other day? If that was her, weren't you on their gag order, ma'am? And if that wasn't her, who was playing those kind of games?
That's what they do.
Okay. Someone called in to the Larry O'Neill Fort Worth Memory political group page the other day when he was live and said that she was on the thread. I happened to be listening that day, y'all, and I was paying attention. She alleged that she was going to call him after the show. Larry O'Neill said she did call him after the show. She never said her name was Carol Darch, though. But she told him to call her by a certain name. But she alleged that she was the officer that was there with Aaron Dean that night. Why did she say that? Why? No, well, I'm
trying to get a mistrial before the trial.
She's trying to
get
a mistrial before the trial.
But
Carrie, I say, as an independent journalist, I believe Mr. Larry will identify as it's his due diligence to, just because you see a name pop up, don't just, it's like if that was the case, because I think you had mentioned it to me and I had got on to it, and he was trying to see who was on the feed or whatever, he was calling out people's names or whatever, I remember that, but it's his due diligence to take time to really find out if this person is who they say they are and not just go with the wind and then repeat come back on and repeat what they said as if it being factual. When I say that, because I can look at you, you don't bring nobody on without finding out who they are, the background, this, that, or the other. You got to get the whole before you bring them on. So it's his due diligence to do that. So like the brother said, somebody playing games. They see the platform is open, wide open. He's allowed. He got this. But I like it because it's open. You know, he allows people to say whatever. You know, how they say. But when people see that, it's an opportunity just to take advantage of a situation. You know, it's like a. And then he's went on a record and said he's got law enforcement listening to it. He got just for me listening to that first show. He said a lot. In that little bit of time space he was using, I said, "Wow, he's saying a lot." So people could easily take advantage of that, you know, of that situation. So it's his due diligence to investigate who that individual is. You know, don't just bring somebody on because they say that they that person. You know,
right. Or don't announce them as that person when you have not verified that they that person.
You haven't verified, right? Because when I was trying to come on this show, I wasn't going to talk about the anything pertaining to the Tatiana Jefferson thing. I was going to make a mention of Carlos Flores being at the deciding vote. You know, he was talking about it right after they had made this vote. So I was going to mention Carlos Flores, and then he said, "Is this the Smith, the neighbor?" And I had to let him know. I didn't want to out Mr. James, but I had to let him know. No. It's not. No, I'm not that Mr. Smith. You know what I'm saying? But he's on the top. He is on the feed. I can see Mr. James on the feed or whatever. But Mr. James, he didn't come on. You know, he didn't come on. I think Mr. James even checked the temperature of the room and realized, this ain't
the
platform.
He's on the gag order.
You know,
Mr. James ain't talking because Mr. James on the gag order. He ain't doing that.
Okay. Yeah. See, I wasn't aware of that. But like I said, I wasn't trying to out Mr. James. But when he said, "Is this Mr. Smith?" that her neighbor said, "No, I'm not that Mr. Smith." I'm like, he's on the timeline though, but I'm not him. But yeah, as a journalist, it's his due diligence to vet whoever's giving him information, or whoever say they want to come on and talk.
You know, Adrian, I would like to ask you a question. Remember the other night you talked about Aaron Dee's evaluation. Can you go back over that again?
Okay, Terry.
I mean, not evaluation, his interview. I'm sorry.
Look here. I've been on mute, and I had poured it up, right?
Okay.
And we don't have the time to go into it. I'm going to tell you where you can find it. It's on the 18 minutes. But you said something that somebody had mentioned to you regarding him being a perv, probably.
Mm-hmm.
That question came up. He had an incident in college. This is at the 11-minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
The interviewer, one of the board members asked him.
He touched somebody's breast, right?
He touched somebody inappropriately. He told a young lady, he said, because he thought she was flirting or whatever, he touched her inappropriately. Apparently, she wasn't feeling it. He told her don't report it because he was with some type of church or something, blah, you know, some little spiel he gave. But she went ahead and, hey, she said no. So apparently it was out of line. And he got some type of citation or some type of plea he copped to, this, that, or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I can't hear. Somebody was saying, so I couldn't hear him. It's part of his interviews. Interviews on 18 minutes long. I'm going to pull it up on my phone.
Where did you find that at?
I just Googled it. Aaron Dean. Actually, WFAA got Aaron Dean police interview.
Well, let me tell y'all something I found very shocking. Let me tell you something I found very shocking. I looked up a story, and it talked about Aaron Dee's evaluation. And I'm going to tell you how crucial it is that they get these evaluations correct on these officers. In April of 2019, now remember, Tatiana Jefferson was killed October 12, 2019. In April of 2019, his supervisor stated to be working at a level of more experienced officers. He told him to keep up the good work. Now, that's April. But earlier performance reviews, so we don't know if this supervisor lied and falsified this, or, you know, for whatever reason. But an earlier evaluation said this. He was a poor communicator. He had poor communication skills. He accused him of being evasive rather than owning up to doing wrong. Had these things been followed closer, would we be here today? Because, first of all, remember it said he was a poor communicator. Remember he failed to announce himself as a police officer. So when you look at that, plus the fact they said he accused him of being evasive rather than owning up to doing wrong, where are we at today? Ready to see the whole city get torn up rather than Aaron Dean just tell people what really happened. You see how that works?
Right.
So see how important it was had somebody who was supervising him followed up to make certain that he had perfected these things that he was weak in, these areas where he was weak in. So today he still, we're 3 years later, and we still don't know what Aaron Dean said happened that night. What triggered him to pull his gun and shoot her? Because she had every right to come to the window. As Malik said, somebody has put a flashlight in the window. So who's not going to go to the window and see who's there? So he can't just tell the truth. He can't just own up and say what happened. So pay attention. That was on an evaluation for Aaron D. Y'all see a problem?
Carrie, I said it. Yeah, and Kerry, I said that falls on the Fort Worth PD as well because they hired him. That say it goes back to the when I saw the interview when I had the privilege of going to that whatever the preliminary they were doing that time ago. Yeah, you know, brought my attention to it. And I was able to go in, and I first saw that interview sitting in that pre-trial whatever stuff they were doing. That stood out to me more than anything, and I've always wanted to know how do I find this in. I think somebody mentioned it. It's still online. All you got to do is just go, you know, type it in a certain way you find. And I found it tonight. It's 18 minutes long. This falls on Fort Worth Police as well because, be honest with you, he shouldn't have been hired. He was very incompetent in his interviewing process. But I guess he looked like one of them, and you know.
But didn't he say in the interview process that he did not have a problem killing anybody if he had to?
Oh, he couldn't answer no other question without, like, other questions. He had a hard time answering a lot of those questions. I mean, he was puzzled. He was froze. I mean, one question, he was, like, dazed for, like, five, like, I kid you not, 2 to 3 minutes. And they said, okay, we'll just come back to it. But when it came to that question of could he kill some, this guy, he did without hesitation said, yeah. He was, like, he's like something sparked in him, you know. And my thing is this, was he trying to prove something to that woman officer he was with that night? Was he trying to prove something to her? Was he trying to prove because, you know, as a man, I'm just speaking from a man's perspective. We have a tendency to want to, you know, I know the brothers can agree with me. We in our lifetime, we have a tendency to show out. We want to show out sometimes in front of women. We have put on the front, you know. So was he trying to prove something, you know, to this woman officer? Because he took the lead on this, you know. They forgot about all protocols. They forgot about all protocols. Everything just went out the window. Everything went
Absolutely.
Out the window.
Absolutely did. Hey, yo, let me say what, Reggie?
I just said, well, that's definitely evident on that part. And I just think the fact that it was just those two there was no other backup. I mean, it's not like Aaron Dean was riding with another cop with him that, you know, they could work together. So it's a lot of things procedurally that went wrong in that whole, you know, scenario. And the only thing we can hope from here on out is that some way, somehow, something is learned to where this doesn't happen again because, you know, Mr. Smith's concern, it wasn't that unreasonable to say, want to go over there and check to see if she was okay. Because, you know, God help him if he'd have went over there and checked it himself and something bad would have happened. He'd have definitely been blamed for that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree.
That, you know, their approach going over there under the presumptions that they had, that they were just going to catch a burglar as opposed to just going and finding out if there was somebody in there first. That was just totally egregious, because that's supposed to be your first order of business, is to secure the property and make sure everything was clear. And okay. had they done that part, I believe that Tatiana would be alive. And I know it's always easy for us to second guess everything at the expense of this poor woman's death, but unfortunately, that's the position we're in now because of the gross incompetence of the department and Aaron Dean in particular.
You know what? I thought about the things that could have been done differently, that we would have seen a totally different outcome. And that was if he had pulled up in front of the house with his lights on. If he had gotten on his speaker and said, "Police, can whoever's in the house come to the front door?" You know, if he had just gone to the front door, either of the doors, and him and his partner stood there for a few minutes and observed what was going on. The lights were on. You know what I'm saying? So the lights, Mr. James said in the call that the house was well lit. You could see it from across the street. He could have said, "Police," at the front door, if he had only knocked. He could have knocked and said, "Police." He could have called his supervisor if he questioned if he should have gone in the backyard or not. If you didn't see anything in the front of the house, why didn't you call the supervisor? When you looked in the back and you didn't see nothing on the ground, like somebody was throwing stuff on the ground to steal it or something, what was the purpose of going back there and flashing the light in the window if the lights were on? You see what I'm saying? And so don't go in the backyard of a house when it's dark, when the front of the house is well lit. And then if they had just used a little patience, just to stick around just long enough to listen, to observe, things would have turned out differently.
Standard operation procedure on something like that is normally to go to the front. If no one answers, then you go in to see if everybody's okay. Then you go to the backyard. You don't go to the backyard first and work your way around. That's stupid.
I agree. And on this, as far as this operator is concerned, who is the operator? What did she understand Mr. James to say? Because we heard what Mr. James said. Now, what did she understand Mr. James to say, and why did she never ask him more questions if she was concerned about it being an open structure versus whether or not he was saying a welfare call? Because he did call in on the non-emergency number. So, again, he didn't call 911. He called the non-emergency number. He talked to the operator. We listened to the call. He said, "I want you to go check on my neighbor. The doors and the windows are open, and it's late. And the cars are in the driveway." So,
what happened?
How did that get translated?
He did say that as well. He said both cars were there because she asked, was there anything unusual? And he said, no, both cars is there. But he said it's just not normal for her to be there with the doors all wide open. And, of course, like I said, it was like 2:30 in the a.m. Not 2:30 p.m. or even 8 o'clock at night. I mean, 2:30 at night and the lights are on like that. Yeah, that would bring some concern, and I get that. But the procedure on what was done was just totally egregious in my opinion.
Listen, y'all, we're gonna go over just a few minutes. So after 10 o'clock straight up, you're not gonna be able to hear this via the internet. So you're going to have to jump on the phone line now in the next 60 seconds. That's 515-605-9321 in order to hear the rest of the show. That means 515-605-9321. It's at the top of your screen if you're listening via the internet. You're going to have to hop on that line to hear the rest of what we're going to say. We're just going to go over just a few minutes. What were you saying, Adrian?
Hey, Carrie, you all are familiar with the term the element of surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
The element of surprise. I think law enforcement is trained to use the element of surprise, but not for instances like this. The element of surprise is supposed to be for situations you know damn well something is amiss. You know, somebody's doing something, You know what I'm saying? You don't want to give up your you don't want to draw attention to yourself because you're trying to get, quote unquote, this wasn't one of those element of surprise situations. This was a simple knock on the damn door. The door is open.
Yeah.
Announce yourself. After you do that, if you don't hear nothing, then you go to step two. This is not rocket science. Knock on the door. Knock on the door. Then you go to the next phase of your quote-unquote train. Okay, knock on the door. Wait for, like we all in agreement. Wait for a response. Wait for someone to say something. Wait for something. If Ms. Jefferson comes from out there, hello, ma'am, put your head, ma'am, there, then you can go through your procedures. Ma'am, hands up. Law enforcement, wait, who are you? Who are you? You know, not even have to draw down on it, but you got to start communicating with this person. Hey, Ms. Jefferson, I'm sure where it came from. Hello, can I help you? Can I help you? Ma'am, do you live here? Do you? Boom, boom, boom. We can have this conversation. But to be this, I'm telling you, it's in that interview. I'm going to send this interview to you. The guy was on an adventure. This guy was on an adventure that night. This man was on a adventure. He felt some type of way. 2 a.m. in the morning, they probably been just sitting. They probably just been sitting, like all most officers do. They just sit on. They don't patrol. They just sit. They sit in their cars waiting for calls. That's all these officers do. You said patience, not only patience, Kerry, consideration. Had he had consideration for Mr. Tatiana Jefferson, this would have been a whole different situation. Had he had consideration.
Let me mention something while you're saying that, that people do not know or may not know if they've never seen that backyard. The air condition was directly underneath the window. So directly in front of the window was an air conditioner, which meant that Aaron Dean, if you look at the body cam, he's off to the side of the window. And so is his partner. So that said, where was the threat? Because you got a flashlight in her face and you're off to the side. So where was the need to take a shot when she couldn't even see you because you got a flashlight in her face? FYI.
Right.
FYI. So listen, y'all, these are some statements that are being made that I think people need to pay attention to. Statement like a Tatiana Jefferson had a gun in her hand when she went to the window. Who said that? Because the police report didn't say that the officer said that. So who said that? Because the gun was on the nightstand in the still picture. So again, like Eddie Griffin said, shortly after this shooting, the only way the gun could be on the nightstand, and Tatiana Jefferson went to the window and had it in her hand, pointing it out the window at the same time, was that she would have had to go to the window with the gun in her hand, and after she was shot, she would have had to carefully place it on the nightstand before she fell to the ground. And we know that right there is in the land of impossibility. FYI, y'all. Second thing, Zion said Tatiana Jefferson did anything in terms of the gun. Y'all, he's an 8-year-old child who has been traumatized, hungry probably, sleep deprived, in shock, you know, grieving his aunt, you know, surrounded by strangers, taken to a strange building, not accompanied by anybody that he knew, and told to give a statement to a total stranger. So are we really going to say that we are going to base where the gun was based on an 8-year-old statement? I don't think so.
Well,
am I right,
though? That's true.
Am I
now,
right?
Listen, Kerry, this thing, I think one of your questions, I would say it has to be somebody in the PD, maybe more than one person who knows how to leak stuff to the media, because they know the media doesn't care. Media doesn't care. The media is detrimental to black lives. Put it like that. The media is detrimental. Mainstream media is detrimental to black lives. We see it on a daily basis. So they're not willing to vet, because, you know, a lot of media always wants to be the first to put out something. Mm-hmm. Media always clamors of who can put out information first, who can put out the most sensational thing first, who can do this, who can do that. So I'm sure it's somebody in PD who leaked all that information just to
they
get
do
it
that all the time.
Just to get it in the air. What you say, brother?
I said they do that all the time.
Yeah, just,
you know?
Yeah, just to get it in the air. Just to get it in the
yeah.
air. Get people talking about
it. Unconfirmed source or whatever.
Right. And sometimes they just throw lies out there to get to have people follow a certain narrative. You follow
exactly.
me? I'm looking under this
yeah.
lawyer.com. It says the police are allowed to lie or trick you to give a statement, but not to use force, threats, false promises, or coercion. Well, we're talking about an 8-year-old child. This statement, in my opinion, was 100% done under duress. This boy was scared to death. You know, his mama was nowhere around. His aunt had just died. You know, he was being taken somewhere by total strangers, put in a police car, taken to a strange building, told to give a statement about something he had just witnessed when he hadn't even had a chance to process it. So you're talking about a statement under duress. That's what you call a statement under duress. Basically,
they threaten the kid. I wouldn't be surprised if written the child saying something like, well, you better tell us exactly what happened, or, you know, something like that. Or are you sure this is what happened? Because if it's not the right thing, you could be put in foster care or something. There ain't no telling what they could have said to the child at that time. I don't put anything past the police when it comes to them trying to cover for each other.
Now, remember, police officers are given 72 hours to give a statement after a shooting. Or a killing. But a child who was just traumatized, saw someone they love in the door, just killed, but they're forced to give a statement within an hour. Come on, y'all. That's cruel and unusual punishment. And shame on you. Huh?
Yeah.
And it's the attorney's responsibility to make sure that shouldn't be even a part of the trial. If they went through the procedure to take their child off and talk to him without an adult, you know, most times you put to take his kids places and just supervise him until you're able to get somebody there. Then explain to him what's going on. This is what's going on. This is why he's here or she's here. We need to sit down. You be willing to go on record. You know, they got to go through that. So for somebody, if they didn't go through that procedure, this shouldn't even be, this young man, even sit, he shouldn't even have to sit through no, relive this, you know. He's already living it. Like you say, he's been living it, reliving it daily. But he shouldn't have to go through this process of cameras and the media and courtroom and all that's for adults. You know what I'm saying? So he shouldn't have to. So it's up to the attorney.
At this point, he's being treated like he's a criminal.
Ooh, that part.
Yeah.
The only difference is
going to start opening statements on this trial.
Well, they're supposed to be picking a jury Monday.
Okay.
But the only difference with him is he's 8. If he was 18, I guarantee you they would have had his something about his they would have drug him to the media the night of the incident. Her nephew 18, he's alleged to have some time. You know how they do it. They would have assassinated his character.
Yeah,
there you go. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Media loves it. They do it all the time. You can be a victim, but they support
like this.
Yes.
Let me ask y'all this. Let's talk about the city, because Fort Worth, you have a role in this. Is this city more concerned about protecting the reputation of the police department and the city than it is at getting to the truth?
I think
by the way I laugh, yeah, we all know what that is.
Hey.
I don't care. I wouldn't care if that cop was slicing up sheep. They don't care what he does. Long as he's wearing that badge, he's an outstanding citizen.
Hey.
And they will, I mean, like I said, they would incriminate Mary and Joseph for giving birth to Jesus if he'll save one of those cops.
That's scary.
They don't care.
But look, if you all get your hint.
Go ahead, Adrian.
No, go ahead, kid. I can hold my thought. Go ahead. You got it.
Okay. There were three adults and a child there that night. One adult is deceased. A Tatiana Jefferson will never be able to tell her side of the story. Zion was 8 years old, traumatized, scared, probably heartbroken. I mean, in total shock, more than likely. And then there was two adults who were trained police officers who know exactly what happened. So why are we not putting our request for answers about what happened on these two adults that were trained police officers and both know exactly what happened? If we want to know what happened in this trial, why don't we put Aaron Dean on the stand? Let Aaron Dean tell y'all why he took that shot. Did he fear for his life? Did he perceive a threat? We should know that from him. It should not come from Zion. Zion wasn't in the backyard. Zion was in the room with his aunt playing a video game. So at the end of the day, it was four people there, three adults. One is deceased. It was one that was a child, 8 years old, who is not capable of testifying in this trial. And then you got two trained police officers who are adults and should be the ones to tell us what happened that night. Y'all agree with that, or is it just me?
Yep. Well, that's, as they say, they too. More
they're
come.
Not testifying because they can incriminate themselves.
That part. So we don't traumatize an 8-year old to keep Aaron Dean from telling the truth about why he did what he did. Tell me where that makes sense at. Does this city really want to do that?
Yes, and yes. But at the end of the day, Aaron Dean was told when he resigned and everything to keep quiet, don't say nothing, don't talk to nobody, don't do no interviews. Definitely don't do it without a lawyer. But at the end of the day, that's just basic common CYA 101.
And
so he's gonna cover it.
Aaron Dean was only a cop for a second. So my question is, he's not working. So who's taking care of him? Who's making sure he's eating every day? He's
got to take care of him.
There you go. There you go. He hasn't gone without. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm through, Kevin. Go ahead. You got it.
No.
Amen on that, Adrian.
Huh?
So,
what you said?
I said amen on that part.
Okay.
We got to stop putting rookies out on the street in neighborhoods that they're afraid to be in on the 3 to 11 and not expect the tragedy is not going to happen at some point. It's a mall cocktail. It just is. I mean, this city has got to take some responsibility that you can't put a rookie in a car by itself on a 3 to 11 shift in a neighborhood he's afraid to be in, unsupervised. I think that's the problem. Until he gets out of that rookie stage, whatever, however long that takes, then he shouldn't be on certain sides of town if y'all training him that he should be scared of everything that goes bump in the night. You know, if you feel like everything that goes bump in the night on the south side is a reason for you to pull your gun and start shooting, then you should not be on the south side on the 3 to 11. Maybe you should be on the south side on the 6 to 2.
Well, you got to remember, he was on that 8 to 8 because he was, because it was 2:30 a.m. when that shooting went down. So it wasn't no 3 to 11.
That would be 11 to 7.
Well, yeah,
that would
that,
be
that
seven.
11 okay. to 7. Or like I said, if it's a 12-hour shift, it's 8 to 8.
Oh, wow.
Or 12 to 6.
Yeah,
exactly.
12 to 6, something like that. Okay, y'all, listen. One thing I want to almost close with is this. What does justice for Tatiana Jefferson look like? In my opinion, Aaron Dean be responsible be held responsible for her death. If Tatiana Jefferson is deceased, Aaron Dean took her life. There was no reason that she had to die. She was not in the commission of a crime. She was in her own home. She was a medical student, college educated, minding her own business. No reason she should be dead. So somebody got to be held responsible. If Aaron Dean is the one they said had the gun in his hand and he shot her, doesn't it stand to reason that Aaron Dean has got to be held responsible for her death, or is it something new that I don't know about? But that's one.
Well, when you say held responsible, you mean held responsible as far as going to prison for it, held responsible as far as being found guilty of a charge?
You're charged with murder, whatever the whatever time that you're supposed to serve for murder.
Well, it's like I told you. If he gets convicted of murder, that would be a precedent right there, because I just don't see that happening. It's not going to happen. They will hang the jury before that happens.
It's
going to end up a hung jury or an acquittal.
Wow.
But I just don't believe that he's going to be convicted of murder. If they can convict him of a lesser charge, I can see that. But murder, uh-uh.
Okay. Well, my question is, what other charge would actually fall up under that besides manslaughter or something?
That's what I was thinking. Maybe manslaughter,
criminally negligent homicide. It's a whole litany of things that can be convicted of. But at the end of the day, going to prison for murder for 30 years to life or 25 to life, I just don't see that happening.
Okay. We'll put a pin there. The second thing I think should happen, if we're going to get justice for Tatiana Jefferson, the Fort Worth PD department, the Fort Worth Police Department should redefine what a welfare check is and how it should be handled. First of all, they should ask the caller clearly, do you feel like this is a welfare check or do you feel like something is going on? The police officer, if it's a welfare check, should always announce themselves. Three, they should pull up in front of the house with their lights on. They should follow police protocol or call a supervisor if they have questions. Observe before you react. And six, analyze everything before overreacting. They absolutely should redefine welfare check in Fort Worth PD Police Department. Absolutely make certain that they understand from the caller, what do you believe is happening here? What with this call, are you saying this is a welfare check? So we won't have no misunderstanding about what you thought the caller meant. You can ask the caller, are you saying that your neighbor needs a welfare check?
Caller, you're putting too much pressure on the caller to distinguish what is and what is not a dangerous situation in that scenario. That's why when the police officer gets over there, his first rule of what he's supposed to do in procedure is to get there, check the location, and try to make contact with the resident.
But no, there's a reason. No. Mr. James called a non-emergency number because he didn't think it was an emergency. So for that reason alone, I think it would not hurt for the operator to understand what she believes the caller is asking for. Are you asking that, you know, we roll up like the task force, or are you asking that we just send some officers over there? Because if truth be told, they have other officers that could have come out on that call that were not police officers. They were the neighborhood people, what they call crime patrol.
The only other thing that would make that call like that was if they had suggested of some sort that they heard shots were fired and the doors were wide open and go on with that scenario. Then they would call for some sort of approach like they did. But other than that, they jumped out the car with another agenda in mind.
Exactly.
Fourth thing, y'all, justice for Tatiana Jefferson, in my opinion, looks like the civil suit that was brought by this family. They receive a fair settlement, something Fort Worth don't typically do. But I think these people deserve justice in the form of a civil suit being sent and being handled fairly. And I don't mean how like how y'all handle Jacqueline Craig. No disrespect to Jacqueline Craig, but I really think Jacqueline Craig got shortchanged on what she deserved. My opinion.
Big time.
My humble opinion. Okay. Cops be trained to react on every side of town the same way. Because if you're being told that if you go to the south side or if you go to the north side or if you go in Stock 6 or Poly that everything moving, you should shoot at it, then that's the wrong training. And first of all, it's biased. And so anytime you're if that is a fact and you all are training officers differently for one side of town, if they're trained to react one way in Tanglewood, as though a robbery can't be in progress in Tanglewood, but in Stop 6 they're trained that everything is a robbery, that's not proper training, in my opinion, my humble opinion. The partner never should have followed an officer who was breaking protocol. So in my opinion, you're equally as guilty. And to the point in which he took the shot. But y'all both should have been reprimanded had he stayed on the force or terminated, because at the point in which you know protocol says stop, knock on the door, see what's going on, observe, and you don't do any of those things, and you follow another officer into the backyard, and what happens happens, both of you all should have been terminated.
Humble
opinion.
Well, they're okay with that. They had a field day on that one. But I think what should have, I mean, in that situation, like if it were me, you know, I mean, I've been a security officer, I've been in that type of situation, I would have said something as simple as, well, if you want to go back there, you go back there. I'm going to the front.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, but at the end of the day, going to the front is the mistake that, you know, not going to the front, should I say. That's the reason why we're talking about this thing 3 years later and about her death and everything, because the simplest procedure was not followed.
Mm-hmm.
Make contact with the president and see if there is anything wrong. She could have been in there cooking. Or like she said, playing a video game. Could have been in there having a shower, taking a bath. Anything could have been happening other than mm-hmm. what did happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And then y'all, I think what does justice look like for Tatiana Jefferson? I think we need to, at the Fort Worth Police Department, re-review the hiring process. What types of personalities are you putting on the street? Are you really putting officers out there? One thing that I read about Aaron Dean, he said that he wanted to go to the military because he wanted mm-hmm. action. But he chose not to go to the military and decided to go to the police force because he felt like he didn't have to go overseas to get that action.
He said that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh. That's just what that is.
Well, it was.
I mean, somebody wasn't paying attention. It is what it is. Another thing that mm-hmm. I think, what does justice look like for Tatiana Jefferson? Zion should be given paid counseling for as long as he feels like he needs it, even if it's a lifetime. The city owes them.
Well, I think they're going to do that anyway.
Who told you that? Anyway.
I'm just saying under circumstances such as that, that's going to happen about anyway, because there will be financial compensation as far as his type of mental trauma and everything is going through. That should be mandated. If it's not mandated, somebody should be making sure that it happens. But I don't see that being a problem.
Hmm.
By the black child and actually adolescent, mm-hmm. they'll go to the point of trouble or problem child, and next thing you know, he's locked up.
Mm-hmm. Support. He needs counseling as long as he needs it. And also, y'all, what does justice look like for Tatiana Jefferson? I think people in this city should stop trying to place the burden on a Tatiana Jefferson, what she did or didn't do at the window, which I believe it was nothing more than go to the window and peep out and see why that flashlight was coming through her window. blaming on Mr. James for making the call. Mr. James just made a call because he was concerned about his neighbor, and trying to put the burden on Zion Carr. Zion Carr was sitting in a room playing a video game. How in the world can we put this on the shoulder of an 80-year-old? I mean, it just makes no sense. So put the blame where it lies. Aaron Dean and his partner, Carol Darch, went into a poorly lit backyard instead of knocking on the front door of a house that was well lit and announcing themselves as police officers. And the city of Fort Worth and the Fort Worth Police Department should be transparent and not be willing to destroy this entire city, dividing this city of between the people and the police department, the black community and the police department, over this trial. We're willing to tear up a whole city over one man? That sounds like something like back in biblical days with Lot. God destroyed a whole city. God destroyed a whole city and spared Lot. So we're going to tear up the whole city to spare Aaron Dean? Wake up.
But you have to understand one thing on this that a lot of people is not really looking at or not saying. Defense attorneys, that's what they do. And as long as the money is rolling in, they're going to be defense attorneys.
Okay. So we're going to let three defense attorneys, which that was Gill, Lane, and Bursette, set the whole tone for the trial? I thought the DA's office
It's three years later.
And you know what?
It almost speaks in itself. You know, 3 years later.
It does.
It's the defense attorneys and the employees that's got it down here this far.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? When does the city heal? The city has been in a headlock for 3 years over the trial of the century. And then we get to this point and we see bullying before the trial even gets kicked off good. I mean, really, is that where we want to go? But yet y'all say transparency and you know, you want to, you know, be transparent and let the city see everything because, you know, that's what we do. That's our prerequisite. Well, it doesn't look like it. What?
I said it's like a slap in the face with mud behind it.
Yeah. And what does justice for Tatiana Jefferson look like? We got to stop valuing blue lives. And I say there's no blue blood in the world, by the way. So when I say blue lives, I'm talking about police officers' lives over citizens. There should not be no hierarchy. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And we should not be wanting to allow police officers to feel like they can shoot and kill people and somebody not have to pay for that. I couldn't have gone into Tatiana Jefferson's backyard, made a mistake, and killed her without going to jail. It couldn't have been, oops, I made a mistake. I saw my shadow. I thought she had a gun. I perceived a threat. I was in fear for my life. None of that would have worked as my defense. Period. So. We got to stop valuing blue lives over regular citizens' lives. And then we cannot be willing, justice for Tatiana Jefferson. Tatiana Jefferson would not want this city, this county, to place the burden of what happened to her on an 11-year-old nephew. I know that. And I never knew her. But I know that. Don't y'all know that in your gut, that she would not want this to be happening?
Of course not.
Definitely.
Come on, y'all. Get his little boy a break. Don't y'all dare put him on the stand and make him testify to something he didn't even see. He didn't see why Aaron Dean took that shot. He does not know. And I don't think where he said the gun was or what somebody coerced him to say the gun was, it's irrelevant. Shame on y'all.
It's irrelevant. He shouldn't have to come to trial. All he should be left with is knowing that the person who took his aunt's life was held responsible. That's the only thing, last thing he need to be known about this tragedy. He was held responsible. He shouldn't have to come and relive this and miss school and, you know, miss out of his childhood, because he's still a child. Miss out of his childhood, trying to develop, trying to get better, trying to steal, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because think about it, he's putting on too. He's a young man, but I'm pretty sure he has to put on for people, you know? Nobody knows what kind of nightmares he has, you know what I'm saying? We don't know. So he shouldn't have to relive this. He shouldn't have to.
Who has the ability or the authority as a guardian or guiding person to say no?
I heard that, you know, basically, and this is hearsay, that you know, he's under doctor's care and it's being advised that he should not testify. I think that's sound medical advice. And so I think anybody that would try to make him testify is as negligent as the Dallas Police Department was when they pulled that boy who heard something the night Botham John died, and they drug him all the way from California to the courtroom to testify to say he heard something, and then he ended up dead. It's not working.
Right. In the parking lot. Remember all of that.
Right. Right.
Yeah, definitely.
What was his name, Reggie?
I'm trying to think. It was Joshua Brown
fled this trying to keep from a testifying in the Botham John case, and they drug him back here, made him testify, only for that young man to come up dead suspiciously. We know they said it was a drug deal, but yeah, nobody believes that, by the way.
Did you get the name? Did you get the name? I actually put
Joshua
y'all on hold. Did he get the name?
Joshua Brown.
When they said that, like I said on your last show, Kerry, when they said that, man, that thing went one after the other. I said they put a hit out on that young man. That wasn't no drug. Man, get out of here. They put a hit out on a young man.
That's it.
And so Joshua Brown is dead today because he was forced to testify in a trial he didn't want nothing to do with. And so this little boy, he has his whole life in front of him. Do we want to ruin his life? I'm not saying nobody better go put a hit on him, because they bet not. But my point is, do we want to drag him into court and ruin his life psychologically for the rest of his life? He got to relive that and then
I'm going to be a little curious about that one, that they would even go that far to get him to testify. I would like to think they had enough sense to not do that.
He's on the witness list. So, yeah, they trying. They trying.
Like I said, I hope. That's all I can do is hope.
Wow.
It's a whole lot of things that we just got to stay tuned and see how it turns out, because this thing can go so many ways, both bad and good, mostly bad. It can go bad in a whole lot of ways. And just waiting for this to happen, waiting these 3 years for this thing to finally take place. It's been a serious nerve wracking experience, but thank God it's almost over. And hopefully it'll end with a proper ruling.
But you know what?
Going even longer.
Reggie, you didn't believe that they were going. You didn't believe that they were going to convict Amber Geiger, but they did. And she's serving 10 years, which ain't nearly enough.
I'm gonna say this again. Her being convicted is not the bad news. Getting 10 years is the bad news. People can say that she got convicted and justice prevailed. That's bullshit. She should not be looking at being free in this decade.
If anybody is the guy who Amber Geiger was, remember Amber Geiger was the Dallas police officer who shot and killed Botham John in his apartment. And then thought, she said, she had been working a double, and she was confused about which floor she was on, and she went in his apartment, even though the door slammed shut and you couldn't just get in like she said. But she killed him. And so she got 10 years. She was the one that they stroked her hair, and the family gave her hugs and all that stuff. So
first
that's it.
First door was shut. He went in. Then it was the door was pried open. Then they said the door was wide open. So, you know, they told 100 lies about that. And the reason why we don't know anything now is because they deleted the footage off the security cameras on that floor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the police did that. So we'll never know. Because I promise you, if we had that video footage from the security cameras on that day, she would have got 129 years for that one because she went in there with intent to kill.
Okay. And, yeah, we got to get out of here because we're way over tonight. But listen, okay, last thing, first of all, we know prayer changes things. So we're not going to automatically say that we won't see justice in this case because we know God gets the final say. So facts about this case is as of the pretrial, the judge is not allowing cameras in the courtroom, but who knows, you know, what may happen after that. So we are, we're going to keep praying that the right thing happens because we didn't think they were going to get Amber Geiger, and they did. So anything is possible in the land of prayer. So also we know that the system is lacking balance in Tarrant County. We know that they hardly ever convict cops. I don't think they've ever convicted a cop here in Tarrant County. But again, prayer can change things. I want it to be said, it sends the wrong message that if you can be in your own house, minding your own business, college graduate, going to med school, playing with your nephew, babysitting, you know, having a good time, and for absolutely no reason at all, someone kills you and no one is held responsible because it was a police officer that did it, does that really send the right message to Tarrant County? Is that what we really want to say to the civilians that nobody is safe? Because if a police officer shoots you, nobody's going to be held responsible. I don't think that's what we want to say. I do know that a prayer vigil is planned for this trial at the address of Tatiana Jefferson, and I don't know the date. I want to say it's this coming Sunday. I think it is. I think it's Sunday tomorrow. But follow me on Facebook, and I'll post it. I'll find out as soon as the show is over, and I will tell you. But, yeah. So, yo, listen, that's all we got tonight. And if they happen to gag order me, I pretty much said it all already. I said everything I think I want to say on this particular trial. So if y'all decide to put gag orders out on Monday, oh, well. But I think it's not necessary. It hasn't been done in any other cases where police officers were involved in shootings, and I don't see where it's necessary here. I think if you are man enough to go out and shoot a person, you know, then you should be man enough to accept the fact that people are going to talk about it. That simple. So listen, y'all, I got to get out of here, but Monday I'll be back at 12 noon, something totally out of order, special show, because I'm doing the Chronicles of State Farm, all the people that they have screwed over week after week on Mondays. I'm going to be talking about it. So that's going to go down on Monday and on Friday night. Next Friday night, I'm going to be talking to Dee Crane. She's the mother of Tavis Crane, who was killed by the Arlington police officer, who has since lost qualified immunity. So we're going to talk about that Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. So until then, until Monday at 12 noon, when I will talk to Josh Jordan about how State Farm really did him bad, sold his car, even though it had a lien still on it. Totally incredible story. We're going to be talking about that again Monday at noon. Until then, good night.
Good night.